This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 266 for Wednesday, March 21st, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me tonight, Mr. Brockett Vola. Hello, sir.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! It is
I did it.
The first day-ish of spring. That was yesterday, I guess, but technically It is now springtime. And I have That's to right. say, like, especially since the time change, for those of you listening in North America, I don't know, does it change everywhere or is it just North America?
There's...
That's terrible. I don't know that.
Mostly all over it. It does... I know there are already... States are already trying to work out different things, and certain states are screw up the whole timeline.
For sure.
Some states are cut in half.
Yeah.
Like, America's really bad.
A lot it's a Canadian invention. You're welcome.
Yay! Way to go, Canada. You finally got us back.
Yeah.
All the terrible things.
All the terrible said. Things. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, I, as a freelancer, I don't tend to really notice the loss of an hour of sleep because I just sleep in, so it doesn't really matter. What happens is like that Monday, that Sunday morning where you wake up and you're like, oh, huh, it's noon already. That's it. Like that's the extent of my, my experience with it. However, what I do notice, especially as an artist, working later on in the day, my studio has got natural light up until 6 o'clock now, that sort of thing, which I enjoy. I much prefer the days getting longer. And if I go for a run, I don't have to do it kind of midday. If I decide to go at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, even it's still light outside when that happens. So, that's a little bit better. I enjoy that. It's reminding me, the changing in the light is reminding me of my summer vacation last year when I went to Utah, because I was there during the longest days of the year. And, because it was so flat, like it was light until 9 o'clock. It was kind of crazy. So it was nuts. It was because, I mean, it gets dark-ish because you're out in the boonies. It's not like you're near a city. So the sky isn't lit up with city lights, but when the sun goes down at, I want to say 7 o'clock or eight o'clock was sunset, it's still light until like 9 o'clock, really. It's not like really dark until the sun really goes away. So it was a nice experience that way. But it's just, I like the changing of the seasons. I find that, I'm curious as to how you feel, because you're in Chicago. But for me, being on the coast, I really enjoy the fall and the spring when the sun is lower in the sky, yet the days are still longer, because with being around water, it just reflects, and it's a very pretty time of year for light, I find, in the spring and the fall. Mm-hmm. Do you find the same in the big city, or is it different for you?
When we do get sun through all the, we get a lot of cloudiness. We're not like LA, which is more smogginess, but we do. But we do have a lot of light pollution, but in general, we're just so cloudy. When we don't have a super gray day, or if you follow my Instagram every once in a while, you'll see I'll post fog in Chicago where I'm on the 23rd floor and like you can see over one building and then the next building is half in fog. And like every single time I see it, I'm like picturing Godzilla walking through the fog, because it's like that kind of thickness where you're like, there's something out there that's a little alarming.
Mm.
But in general, since I have an eye thing, where my eyes absorb light and hold the after image much longer, like around copiers, I like try and block the thing from doing it. Otherwise that image would be in my eye for like 5 straight minutes.
Wow.
It's real bad. But like whenever I'm driving, if the sun is high in the sky, that's the best. Because if it's ever low towards the east or west and I have to drive or walk in that direction, it's a nightmare. Because, like, it's literally like, well, I have to be looking directly in front of me because I don't want to crash or kill myself or other people. But at the same time, like, I'm staring at something that I know my eyes are just, like, way too, like, a little too absorbent of. So when it's spring, I don't really love as much here in Chicago. I also have allergies, but, you know, spring here is just literally like third winter / rainy fall.
Yeah.
But fall here is actually excellent. So, you know, most like you know where you are. If you're in a northern city and you don't like snow, most people will at least agree they like the fall because of that sort of niceness of being able to wear a little bit of layers, but you're not completely.
Yeah. You're not dying from heat exhaustion in the city. Like, I remember I visited New York City in the dead of summertime and it was stifling. Like, it was not a pleasant experience. I've also been in New York City in November and it was quite nice. A bit rainy, I think, the first few days, yeah. but there was, okay. We had a couple of nice days too, but I mean, that's the time of year. It's Eastern Seaboard. It's November, you know, October, November. Hurricane season is past, but you're still going to get some serious rainstorms coming up the coast. Around here with fall, it's the same idea. We actually have the season fall, which is nice. A lot of times we don't even have white Christmases around here really. The snow tends to push until very late December, usually early January, February. What's weird about up here is that winter does push into spring longer. Like, spring is like a month and a half. It's like halfway through April and May.
Yeah.
and that's kind of it. Like, we don't have a longer spring up here. I remember one of the funniest things I remember about being in bigger cities at different times of the year, especially when the light is low. Specifically Ottawa, New York, really those are the only two big cities I've been in. It's weird when you're standing on a street corner and you're in sunlight, but you're like, I can't see the sun. And it's because it's reflecting off of the shiny skyscrapers. And so you can see the sun casting shadows and you're just like, but there's six shadows and I don't understand. I don't understand what's going on, but it's warm sunlight. It's not artificial light. It's like, this is really bizarre, you know? And
yeah,
you know, like I don't know what the tallest building in Halifax is, but there's two and it might be 18 stories. Like, it's, you know, like, it's not
18 stories. That's very cute.
maybe 23, you know, like, but nothing. It's, they're not ginormous and they're certainly not next to one another. That's the other thing. They're at opposite ends of the city. So
you know, Spider-Man.
No.
He's running down the street just to get to the 18 story building.
There's a phenomenal animation from years ago that made the rounds on YouTube of Spider-Man on the roof of a house. And he's sitting there and he's getting ready and he's all pumped up and he runs to the end of the house. He jumps off and he shoots and he falls flat in his face because he's in like a farmhouse and there's nothing for miles. You know, and that's essentially like Spider-Man around Halifax. He could swing back and forth underneath the bridge, but that's about it. Once you get to Halifax, it's a lot of running. Like, there's nothing you can really do. It's not a very tall city, but I'm okay with that because I can drive for 20 minutes, not even, and be on the coast at the beach, right? Like, it's not hours, you know, like it's close. Speaking of Spider-Man, actually funny that I brought that up because he's been on my brain. One of the things I wanted to talk about tonight, I've been struggling to figure out something to watch because I'm still trying to get into Jessica Jones. So I haven't really watched much of
first that. Or second season,
episode two. So like, I'm really not that far, enjoying it, but like, I find it is a good show, but it's a good show that I'm just never in the mood to watch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the first and second episodes, I think I finished the second. I've watched them in four different sittings. Like, I get halfway through and I'm just like, it's good. It's a quality show. I'm just not in the mood for it. It's a little too dark for me right now. Anyway, what looks fantastic though, is the new trailer for Infinity War. And that came out last week, March 16th. So, something that you and I bounced around quickly ahead of the show and something that we've discussed in the Citadel Cafe Discord with a couple of other people about trailers is there are a number of people now that are avoiding trailers. The first time I saw it mentioned in the discussion that I followed was regarding The Last Jedi and Tom Racine, who's a podcaster and a former guy on Comics Coast to Coast and his own stuff as well. He was saying how much he enjoyed The Last Jedi because he avoided all the trailers as best he could. And he went in really kind of blind. And I think, you know, I did that for The Last Jedi as well.
Yeah, me too.
I did it for the big Black Panther trailer. I skipped the big one, but I saw the teaser trailer for it. And the, basically it was like, I saw the teaser trailer and I went, ooh, that looks good. And I thought, you know, I think I'm going to skip it. I'm going to skip the other trailer because I don't know anything about this character, and it's going to be fun to kind of go to the movie and experience that. Mm. I was going to do that with Infinity War trailer too, but I was having a rough week last week. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch it. Whatever. I feel like I want to see something cool, you know, like this, something that I enjoy. And I will, so if you don't want to hear me talk about the trailer, tune out now. However, I will mention that there are not any real spoilers, I don't think, in the trailer. I felt like the trailer for Thor Ragnarok gave away a lot. Same with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Whereas...
Yeah, I avoided both of those mostly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So this is just a lot of eye candy. It's a big movie, and it's just, there's a lot of wide shots. There's a lot of characters, and they try to jam them all into the trailer, right? So like, you really got like a lot of fast little cuts of just like, and here's Hulk, and here's Captain, and here's, you know, Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow. Like, just, you know, they just kind of keep on cutting and going and going and going, and it's fine. So it's because you don't really get any story. The thing that I think would be maybe a little spoilery is the monologue from Thanos that plays over the whole thing.
Oh, now, good, because I didn't listen with sound.
Oh, okay. well, I don't want to say spoilery, but I don't know whether it's just for the trailer, you know, or whether it's actually from the movie. Similar to how Ultron was talking over the trailer for Age of Ultron. Same idea, right? And some parallels that I'm enjoying about that. But really, it's a great trailer. If you've been hesitant, or if you're on the fence, you know what? Watch it. It's fun. I don't think it's gonna ruin anything. There is one, maybe two jokes that they do kind of put out there in the trailer. One of them, not a great joke. So meh, whatever. I've seen it. It's not the end of the world. One at the end, good joke. You know, it plays after the Infinity War credits. So if you don't want to have the little fun moments, fun character moments spoiled at all, then once you see Infinity War pop up on screen, stop. And then you've avoided the rest. But there's a fun moment at the end, which I thought was really, really good. But overall, I think it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Where you said you watched it without sound. So like we can just talk about just the pure visuals of it. There's a couple of badass moments. It looks like it features heavily in Wakanda and Black Panther and Captain America. Didn't see much Hulk in the second trailer. He's in the first one, but the Banner was in this one, but the Hulk wasn't, as far as I could tell, unless he might have been in the wide shot, but the wide shots are all green fields and battlefields, so like, Hulk is, I'm not sure where he is, and the shots are really wide. Like, there's obviously some sort of alien army attacking, and they're the size of ants. Like, that's how far out you are in some of these shots. So it's really, maybe not ants, but like horses. So like, you're really quite far away. It looks good. It looks epic. I'm a little concerned that it's just the Avengers versus all kinds of CGI bad guys again, like for the third time. Cause that happened in Ultron. It worked for, I can't remember who they were fighting, the Skrull, the Skree, I can't remember the name of the alien in the first Avengers movies.
Oh yeah, it was not the Kree and it was not the Skrulls. It was
wasn't it the
Ishtari?
Oh, the Ishtari. That's
was
right.
It
you're
the
right.
Ishtari?
I think you're right.
It might be pronounced differently, but it's close.
I think you're right. So yeah, it's got more bad guys. I'm assuming it's from Thanos's home world. Although he was born on Saturn, I guess. Or Titan, the moon of Saturn. I did a little research before the show.
He's a Titan. Yeah, they're So I've read the Infinity Gauntlet, the original graphic novel, and I've read they did a short Thanos Rising, like the story of Thanos, the character, and how he gets all the way up to the events, or how he has these brief moments that lead him further down the path that he leads to get to the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. And he is one of the truly interesting like villains, like when people always complain that a lot of the Marvel films are great, but like they have this same cookie cutter villain of like cookie, you know, the villain wants to take over or destroy this thing and they look this way and that's generally it. And, you know, we've had a few different ones, but like, you know, like Loki at this point, it's almost like he's hardly even a villain. Like you, right. Like you almost look at him as just like a reluctant member of the team mm-hmm. With the way he's sort of used in different manners. But I think one of the most important parts to make Infinity War work, especially since I think they, even though they changed the titles of the films, I'm still thinking heavily that this film will be a, maybe they get really close to the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. From the trailer I've seen, if you don't know the Infinity Gauntlet original story, I'm not going to get into any details of what sets about motions of that, but I don't see the hints from that original comic in here as parts of like motivation or cause and effects. So for that reason, I think this film feels much like, all right, let's put this big fat chess piece on the board. We've been teasing Thanos. Let's get him out there, because half the fun of a great villain is not just like killing them off at the end of a film, which unfortunately Marvel has done. Just like, you know, the old Batman films would always kill the villain. You end up with a situation where like 3 years down the road, you have to like dig out like some bargain basement villain because you've murdered all the good ones.
Right.
So I think just getting his name out, getting what he's about out, because right now he sounds a lot like every other villain. He apparently has some conquest thing in mind, and he's very stoic. Like, he seems very much like, I forget his name, but the one Lee Pace played in the first Guardians film, who actually was the first time we got to see, well, not the first time we saw Thanos, but second time we really get to see him, and the only time we really get to see him like talk. But
the guy with the weird black chin, you're talking about him?
Yeah.
I don't remember his name either. He was forgettable. He was a terrible villain.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So I think this is setting that up, getting him on the same board with them. But there are some really key characters and parts of the cosmos that I don't think are quite ready for a full-blown Infinity Gauntlet situation. And just knowing that they have these other things in the works, which is also part of the sad part of the internet. Like you see this movie's coming out, but then you see the next few movies that are coming out. So you can already sort of like, if your mind works like my mind, I'm already mapping out where the story is going. I saw this trailer and I'm like, all right, I think this is act one, this is act two, and I think vaguely this is what act three is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to put those things together. Which again, I mean, it's not like this film lays out. Like, I would even say Thor Ragnarok's trailer was more disappointing because it really blew the, if you haven't seen it, I'll blow it for you now. It really blew up the whole Hulk being a part of that film.
Mm-hmm.
Because when that second trailer came out and he has that moment where he's like, we're coworkers, you know, mm-hmm. that's hilarious. It was great. It was a huge wowzer trailer because of that. Then when the movie comes, like, you're just waiting the entire buildup for it, which actually kills some of the pacing of that moment. And it's a really well done, filmed, written, like, buildup. Mm. But the whole time you're just like, all right, just tread out the champion. We know it's Thor. So, like, I think some of the things of the trailers sometimes can be a bit too much. But like you say, I think with this one, really the only things that kind of show you are, yes, there's going to be big battles. Yes, you're going to see 1,000 of your favorite heroes. Yes, heroes that have never met before will finally meet. And yes, there's going to be some moments of like probably sheer badassery.
Yeah, I mean, the end of the trailer is grimmer. There's the monologue from Thanos is a lot grimmer. He's talking about destiny and no matter what you do to avoid it, it'll still come for you, sort of idea. But the The first part of the trailer is a monologue from, oh gosh, I'm blanking on her name. The green girl from Guardians. Wow.
Oh, Zoe Saldana's character of, ends in an A. Gosh.
Gamora?
Gamora, right. Yeah, okay. Gamora.
Yeah, nerd cred, minus five. I just watched that movie like 2 weeks ago. So Gamora's talking because she's Thanos' daughter, right? So she's talking about, yeah, like the whole time I've known him, the only thing he's ever wanted to do is destroy the universe. And I was like, okay, isn't he in the universe? So she's talking about that, and he needs the Infinity Stones to do it, and we've got half of them at least. So then it cues over to Tony Stark saying, like, basically, here's the plan. And he's saying, the only advantage we have is that he's coming to us. So he wants the Infinity Stones. We're going to use them against him. And during that talk, they're cutting from Vision to Doctor Strange to, I can't remember who else they talked about. I think they cut to Quill. Does Quill have a...
Peter Quill. Does he they have, might. They still well, have they one? Had the purple one, the Nova. Nova took it on at the end of the Guardians 1, the purple one.
Right.
So maybe they have access to that one.
Yeah. So like they're talking about all that kind of stuff, and they're just kind of laying out the fact that they're going to have to use these stones. Because Thanos has got two, I think, so far. Or at least he puts a second one in the gauntlet in the film. And I neglected to take note of what color it was that he put in there. I think he has the Tesseract one. Or... you know, from trailer one back in November, we see Loki, I think, holding up the Tesseract and giving it to somebody. I'm assuming Thanos.
Well, then in this trailer, I caught a shot of him holding and crushing the Tesseract, which we've long purported has a stone in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's.
And if anybody again saw Thor Ragnarok, by the way, it blows my mind. I was talking to my friend. And he was like, you know, Thor Ragnarok was good, but like, if you had, you don't have to see it to be able to see Avengers Infinity War. I'm like, I disagree 100% because there's like eight things that happen in Thor Ragnarok that are like direct consequences. Least of which, why would you watch this trailer and not be like, what? WTF with Thor's eye? And then also WTF with like this giant ship Thor's on. Like, if you haven't seen Thor and Ragnarok, you should definitely go see it, A, because it's fun, but B, because there a lot more happens in it, despite all the comedy and spectacle, that actually sets up huge parts of where this movie particularly looks like it I'm guessing starts off. I think you're right, though. I think it's the Tesseract one that he probably snatches on up. And people have long guessed, because we never saw the sixth, that Thanos had one, because up until this point, we've now seen five of the Infinity Stones. So
which one have we not seen?
Well, that's the tricky part, because A, the colors don't match the comics, and B, I don't really feel like they've really shown what the stones were purportedly done. People have like said like, all right, the tester, this one's power, this one's whatever. But the thing is, like, the important part of the Infinity Stones is certain ones have quote unquote power over this element of the universe.
Right.
So for instance, I believe the yellow one that is in Vision's crown in his forehead is the Soul Stone or Mind Stone. Gosh, I can't remember
which
one it is.
It's the Mind Stone. I'm pretty sure.
It's the Mind Stone. Yeah. Okay. Which of course gives you power over the mind. Like, you should be able to have power over projections and that sort of stuff. It sort of makes sense with his sort of phasing ability and his ability to actually have human-like functionality. But then there's ones like, I think the Aesir that was in Thor, the Dark World, the red one is supposed to be power. But really, all that thing does is like act like a weird goop and makes a whole bunch of evil, dark, like elves more powerful. I guess it makes them more powerful. I don't know. But
the Reality Stone?
Yeah, there's a Reality Stone.
That's the red one. That's the red one.
Oh, okay. Well, then that one doesn't make any sense either, because the Reality Stone should be able to change, actually, because there's time, space, mind, soul. power, and reality, I believe.
Yep.
If I had them all correct.
And then the last one was, so Soul Stone, they've got different from Mind Stone, I think. Yeah, so Soul Stone and Mind Stone are different.
Okay.
They're separate. Orange, I don't think we've seen the Soul Stone. I think that's the orange one is the one we don't have a beat on. So maybe that's the one that Thanos has. Again, I have to watch the trailer again because it's the one thing I didn't. I noticed how many stones, but I neglected to watch to see how many, like to which colors they were. I mean, I know Vision's got his stone in his forehead and Strange has got his stone around his neck. So the green and the yellow ones are accounted for. Tesseract is on
Thor's
ship. Or is it
supposedly?
Or is it in? Or is it back on? On no, because Hela destroyed. I'm blanking on names. What's the name of Thor's home?
So Asgard.
Jesus.
So Hela could have taken. But here's the thing: it's the easiest connection to make. Loki stares at the Tesseract when he's walking through to get Surtur's crown. There's a long pause of that. And now we've seen a trailer where Loki's holding a Tesseract. I think we can all assume that's the reason why, quote unquote, again, assuming Thanos' ship is the one that shows up at the end of Ragnarok to basically jack the Tesseract from, you know, I'm sure Thor is like, we don't have it. And Loki's like, crap, I do. And who knows, maybe Loki immediately turns on them all again, which would make sense, but also at this point is a little threadbare. Like Loki needs to like straight up just spend at least a couple movies either being good or bad, because he spent way too much of these movies like straight up just going back and forth again. I understand that from his character point of view, but like as an audience member, it's no longer a fun twist when Loki does something good or something bad.
Yeah, it's no longer novel. It's just like, okay, so I'm expecting the unexpected, and whatever he's gonna do, he's gonna not do and double cross everybody. Like it becomes predictably unpredictable, I guess is the way to put it. But the Avengers, and not to dwell too much on the stones, but like, the you know, there's awesome moments with looks like Black Panther and Captain America. There's a moment where Captain America is being struck by Thanos and he catches his hand. It's not a fist. Thanos tries to like palm him, tries to like squish him. and Captain America catches it. Now he's catching it with both hands. I didn't realize just how big Thanos was. Like, he's Hulk size.
He's huge.
Jai freaking enormous. And I've seen some kind of feedback online of Thanos being too handsome. Like, the people think that he looks too vanilla, I guess, compared to the comics. I can understand that. I also, having looked up a bunch of artwork before the show, I can see how they think his head is too slim. I think it's probably a product of making him look a little bit like Josh Brolin, who's voicing him. He's an attractive actor, so it handsomizes, you know, Thanos a little bit. However, I'm glad that he has a more human proportion stature. He's a big, big guy, but he's not squat. And all of the drawings that I've seen, he's almost as wide as he is tall. And his thighs and his feet and his hips, they don't make him feel like tall and menacing. They just make him feel like a tank, which is fine, but like the proportions are weird. It makes him look like he's got really short, stubby legs, which to me does not speak to any kind of threat. You know, having him taller with a big barrel chest and huge arms and big fists and all that kind of stuff, and also having, you know, like just being a much taller version, more human proportions, I think is better. And in this particular trailer, we get to see more of the Marvel Cinematic Universe version of the Thanos armor, which I think looks really good as far as, you know, adapting the 70s kind of like weird kind of cone shape, you know, chest thing and the big boots and big gloves. And like, there's some things where it's like, you know, I'm glad they didn't go that route. Like, I'm glad that they, you know, like things like Thor's armor, it looks good, stays the comics, but it still has, you know, still has the circles and, you know, it looks good. I'm not sure how I feel about Captain America's outfit with the great big, arm gauntlets. He's almost got like a Batman thing going on, like with these big gauntlet things. Who else is in there? Spider-Man, obviously, is what got us on this whole thing. I'm excited to see Spider-Man in like the proper Avengers thing doing epic stuff. Like we saw him in Captain America Civil War doing stuff on a tarmac and fighting a bunch of people, but like this is like full on teamwork. He's not fighting other people, he's fighting with the Avengers. And I'm looking forward to it. There's after that joke at the end of the trailer, there's a couple of shots of Spider-Man swinging through and fighting, you know, whatever Thanos is throwing at everybody. And it looks just like a wicked ride. You know, it's one of these things that you just do not want to miss in theaters if you're at all a fan of the Marvel stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. It's definitely one of my must-sees coming up.
Absolutely. What's funny is when I think they had this on paper, they wanted to at least be able to have the opportunity to get Spider-Man in this film. So it makes sense that that he is an important part of the structure. And obviously they probably shot shots with Spider-Man in mind. But what was the fun, unique thing was that they were going to be able to get him in Civil War when they did, to sort of introduce him. And then when that really worked out well, you know, they were able to restructure things a little bit and get, because I believe Spider-Man Homecoming actually moved up in front of Infinity War than when initially they thought they would be able to do it.
Right.
In fact, it's very odd to me, which again is the reason why I'm projecting out towards a second Infinity War type film, is that Captain Marvel is not coming until after this film, which is interesting because of her like cosmic and the Kree and all this sort of stuff. But yet again, maybe they're like, look, straight up, there's only so much mind space for all these strange new alien races. We haven't even bothered to get to the Skrull because that'll probably blow people's brains away because of the Fantastic Four shit. Here we'll save Captain Marvel, which again, I think it's smart. Although who knows, they might pull a Black Panther and she might show up in a couple shots here and there of doing something.
Yeah. How much do you want to bet that Captain Marvel is teased as the post trailer or the post movie credit scene?
Right. Yeah.
In Infinity War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yes. All that sort of stuff. Which, I mean, at this point, it's funny because the post trailer or the post credit things are now becoming less like, ooh, like giggle, like really interesting. And they're either a joke, like a throwaway joke. Mm-hmm. Or it's actually a semi-important plot point.
Well, like with Ragnarok, same, because that was what was at the end of Ragnarok, right? Was him finding the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and so it's like, it's very strange that still to this day, as soon as the movie's over and they see directed by, people shoot up out of their seats, and I'm like, I get it if you really have to use the bathroom. But at the same time, like if you do not have to use the bathroom and your car is not being towed, why are you even bothering to move? Like at this point, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like it's built into the whole like situation. Yeah.
I also find that the immediate credits after the Marvel films are also really cool to watch. The way that, however they do it graphically, they kind of take you back through the ride that you just had and all that kind of stuff. I find really cool. I mean, it's sitting through the long black and white scroll, which can sometimes be worth it. And sometimes you're like, well, whatever. And I mean, honestly, these movies are so packed that I will sit there. I'll just wait for people to go. I got nowhere to go. I can wait. It's all good.
I'm a full credits person. I don't know how it started, but, when we can, we will sit through the whole credits. Even like when we know it's like, I don't know, like La La Land, like something like La La Land's not gonna have like Nick Fury come ask Ryan Gosling to join the Avengers of Jazz. I mean, that would be pretty amazing, but at this point I'm like, all right, well, whatever. But we always like to just sit through it, partly because sometimes if it's a real, like, you know, if it's a John Williams score or if it's like a Danny Elfman score, like the music itself, it's going to be phenomenal. And that's true of plenty of other composers. But like also just this small nod towards, like, even if you were third gaffer from the left, that's not a real position. I've sat through and I saw your name whiz by, and you know, it's just a small little thing. So
yeah,
I don't mind doing that, but yeah.
The hard part with big blockbusters like this is that, of course, the amount of special effects and it's a really long credit roll because there's just so much work goes into these movies. It's absolutely crazy just how much goes into them. I'm like you. I really enjoy the theme, the score. So Alan Silvestri, of course, scoring Avengers, and I'm a huge fan. And that's something that these trailers do very well, is they hold off on that Avengers theme until like the very end. And even then it's super slowed down and really weighty. So it's, you know, it's not triumphant. It's Empire Strikes Back sort of feel, you know, like if you could take the Imperial March and the Avengers theme and smash them together, that's what the music for these trailers is like. And so it has that kind of grave feeling. So before we move on, one thing that I want to put out there, I think we're going to lose an Avenger. I think somebody's going to die. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know who, but somebody is going to, I don't want it to be the Vision, but I've got a feeling that it's probably going to be the Vision.
I got guesses.
I mean, he's got a stone in his head. So like, it's not ripping a necklace from around Strange's body, right? It's embedded in his head. It is what makes him him. So I'm feeling that if that goes, so does he. But there's a couple of things in the trailer that I didn't understand and don't necessarily explain it to me, but I'm curious about the guy that with no nose that has Doctor Strange imprisoned in some sort of glass needle thing, that looked really cool. And he looks really menacing. There's a lot of emotion from Tony Stark. And I'm really feeling that somebody, I don't think it's going to be Rhodey because he already took a real hit in Civil War. So the thing is that bugs me, and it's good. Like, it's good that Marvel's not afraid to do it, but I like all of the Avengers. I don't want one of them to die.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's going to have some weight, and I think we're going to get an Empire Strikes Back-esque movie. I don't think it's going to necessarily have a happy ending. I think the Avengers are going to have their butts handed to them. And then we're going to have to see what happens in the next one.
So
that's where I'm standing on it. So what have you been watching? Like, what have you been keeping yourself busy with?
Just different stuff. Catching up here and there. We did watch all of season two of Jessica Jones, Laura and I. Jessica Jones is, by the way, the only Netflix Marvel property Laura will watch with me. She watched an episode of the very first season of Daredevil and said, nope, too violent for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just the brutality of the violence, I should say, because again, like, it's, people have different, like, for horror films, some people can watch a film with no like physical danger, but the whole thing is just build up and like the sense of foreboding, and then there's like things moving, suspense, and then there's people who will watch Saw and quote unquote, you know, these like torture films, and where it's just all out there. So like, when I'm saying brutal violent, I'm just like, if you've seen the TV show, like the hand-to-hand combat, because we're so desensitized by gun violence in America, the like actual hand-to-hand combat, when it's done well, because the one thing I will say about the Chris Nolan Batmans were great in a lot of ways, but the way too many jump cuts. You never know what Batman's doing in these fights. And somehow mm-hmm. he's like I like to see the sort of stunt choreography importance that goes through, which is why hashtag Daredevil in season two is some of my favorite things that I've ever seen like put together in film. But
yeah,
Jessica Jones is different.
Yeah. I like Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Identity, like all those films.
Yes.
I really enjoy watching Jason Bourne kick the snot out of somebody with a book.
Yeah.
like that kind of stuff. I mean, that's Batman-esque is what that is, right?
Right, exactly. Like in when they did the new Casino Royale, and you realize the whole time James Bond wasn't just going to shoot people with his silencer Walther pistol like he's done in every other film, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was exciting because it was this new, you know, this like visceral, like brutal hand-to-hand.
Yeah.
But Jessica Jones is different. One, because it's, again, it beat Wonder Woman to being the first superhero-driven major property from one of the big two, DC or Marvel. And on top of that, it's more of a noir. She's a private investigator, so there's a lot more like detective work involved. She's very rarely using or relying on her super strength, which is really the only thing she has going for her. And the first season was very much, and this season as well, but there, Jessica Jones in particular, I feel like has some messages and some major themes like abuse or mental stability or drug use. There's a lot of like themes that are important to the character and the characters of the story that are addressed in a way that is both fitting and not entirely used for just pure story arcing. And again, it's a diverse cast. I mean, like Jessica Jones primarily is just three women and one African American male. And those are the primary three that are really showcased both seasons, minus like villains and introduced characters. So, Joel, you said you only got to episode two of season two, but you finished off season one, correct?
And I watched season one when it came out, and for whatever reason at that time, that was the just one more Netflix, Joel. Like that was the, I'll totally just spend a Saturday watching two or three of those, you know, in an evening. Instead of watching a movie, I was watching two or three episodes of Daredevil or Jessica Jones or, you know, whatever the newest Marvel thing was out. I'm only two episodes into season two. Now, Lou, who was on last week, said he had finished the whole thing and expressed his like for the arc that Jessica takes over the season. So I am going to keep up with it. My issue with Jessica Jones, I'm finding recently, is I don't find her a likable character. I enjoy the show. I think it's a good quality show. It's Marvel. It's got superheroes. It's interesting. I like the PI thing. Like, there are definitely some redeeming qualities that have been coming back. Problem is, I don't like Jessica. She's not a likable person. She's kind of a bitch all the time. And I get that's kind of who she is and what she's about right now. Anyway, and Lou's comments to her arc have me curious. Like, how does that change over season two? So I am going to continue with it. But right now I'm just finding it very difficult to get through. I've watched the first two episodes, but I've watched them in four sittings. Like, I've had to sit through, and like I get halfway through, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this. And I think part of it is that I want the bright and shiny in my superheroes. And there's just so much dark happening in the Marvel Netflix stuff.
The street level ones.
Same with and that's the problem that I have in general with the DC films, is that same thing, is that you want the bright shiny and you get the grim nighttime sun doesn't shine, sort of like this whole movie is just red and black and, you know, forget any kind of like superhero dumb. It's all just kind of grim stuff, you know, zombie Superman, etc. So I think part of me is really looking forward to things like Avengers, where it's like, hey, they're outside in Africa where the sun is shining. It's really kind of nice.
the splashy colors of... you've come to expect from the
Iron Man, red and yellow, bring it on. like that kind of stuff is just, you know, Thanos, he's purple. That kind of stuff, I think, is just where I'm missing. I also don't find many of the other characters likable. So for example, the stopping point in second episode for Jessica Jones for me was when, I don't remember her name, Jessica's best friend, the blonde?
Trish.
Trish is having coffee with her mother, and her mother is a monster. And yes.
Laura had trouble with the mother. I
understand that she's just supposed to be this terrible person, but like, it's grating. Like, it's just like, okay, just, I want to throw you off a bus and you're acting. Like, I'm sure you're a lovely person, but like, I'm done with the scene. And I decided like, well, that's a good stopping point. Cause this is just, it's not, none of it feels good. And if it's talking about things like, you know, substance abuse and abuse in general, and, you know, medical procedures that are done to people against their will. Like, it's not supposed to be a cheery story. I get it. You know, like, I understand that. But it's hard for me right now to get into when my escape wants to be laser swords and capes and, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. I think it's really interesting, with Jessica Jones, because, the original, is it Brian Michael Bendis who created the original character? I want to say maybe I'll effort that. But it was really interesting that this character is created. She has superpowers, yes, but she spends no time in a suit, and it's really more noir. She's always drinking. She's always down on her luck. She's somehow staying afloat case by case, barely there, always up against the cops. So this one, more than Daredevil, which the first season was almost like the sort of kung fu hero's journey to becoming the master type of thing, and the second season's more of a full-blown superhero season, I really think, when they bring in Punisher and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Luke Cage really dives in and re-examines some of the blaxploitation elements of that era of film. Mm-hmm. And then Iron Fist is just steaming dog crap. So yeah, really, Jessica Jones is modeled after this noir stuff. So there's a lot of hard drinking, hard to likeness about just the genre and the position she's in. But to all of your points, this season does the same thing that I've had trouble with, just with Daredevil, with Luke Cage actually doesn't do this, which is refreshing again, because I think of all three of them, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, and Daredevil are all kind of like, well, I can't really have people around me because they might get hurt, and, you know, I'm so broody. And then Luke Cage straight up just actually he smiles more than you would think. Mm-hmm. And he just has this natural charisma to him. So he's a really nice breath of air with all the somberness of those other ones. But yes, with like Jessica Jones, it's like, man, these characters, you know, she's constantly pushing people away. And at some point, just from a narrative standpoint, it's just difficult. You're just like, all right, I get it. Every season you got to give everybody something to do. I will say, if you finish the season, you'll feel the weight of 13 episodes. I think they have the classic, like with all these Netflix series, it's like the first arc, like we've talked about before, it's usually episodes 1 to 4, 5, or 6.
Yep.
Where it's like, it has a natural, like sort of arc bump. Then there's this weird episode 7, 8, 9, 10 area where they kind of don't know for sure if they want to go straight to the end or not. And then finally the last like three episodes are essentially the climax spread out. It's just, that's the actual meat of the whole season wrapping up, is those last three episodes. So it should have just been 7 episodes. I think as much as I think she does a good job and she adds another different wrinkle to this universe, Carrie Ann Moss's character of Jerry, as the power lawyer, has no reason to be in this season. Trish is really, really pushing whether or not you can get behind some of her motives and what you like of her this season, I think. And of all the people, the person I like the most this season who really charmed me was Malcolm. And he's probably the one who's the most shit on behind everybody. So it is a very, very difficult thing if you're not a big fan of either noir, or you're not somebody who is craving like the literal antithesis of what Thor Ragnarok is, because literally you could watch Jessica Jones season 2 and Thor Ragnarok and not understand how any of these things could be made by the same companies. It's so different.
But, yeah. So very different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. And yeah, talk about color, Thor Ragnarok. Jeez.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, oh, Mark Mothersbaugh does the music. And then meanwhile, you're like, who did the music for Jessica Jones? Is it like an eighth grader who's like really trying to work on his edge? Like, it's just very, like, very weird. But yeah. I will say the biggest negative about Jessica Jones season 2, unfortunately, is what it doesn't have, which is, for my money, one of the best anywhere in the Marvel cinematic or television universe characters, which was David Tennant's Kilgrave, aka the Purple Man, although they really don't really embrace that, and they never give him purple skin. Speaking of you wanting color, like he in the comics has freaking purple skin, and they remove that, but they do allude to the purple a lot. But the absence of the villain of Kilgrave, although she definitely is dealing with the ramifications, as early as the first episode, you can feel this sort of sense of dread about where the consequences of season one have left her and how she's feeling and reacting to the world. But it is a big shame, because just like if you've seen, well, I won't mention any specific ones. There are certain Marvel films recently too, which I feel like have sort of shot themselves in the foot as far as villain placement and where the villains are at the end of the film. And some of those villains were very, very, very engaging, I think. And they didn't Loki them. They didn't shove them off to a shelf to be used for later for more enjoyment. They pretty much have removed them from possibility to some degree, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. But it's a big hole, I think, Jessica Jones is trying to season two is trying to fill. Once you get to a certain part, Joel, I think you'll have a better idea of what this season is supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. But I really think they should have just, in the first two episodes, get there, then gotten to right where the main meat of this season for Jessica, as particularly as a character, and she's our main character, so that's really where the meat should be. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really take place until about, I would say, at least, I think it's episode 4 or 5, maybe.
Right.
Like, so it's definitely feeling the weight of 13 episodes. And I mean, you know, they just did Defenders, that was 8, which I thought was a huge disappointment. But, and I know the other seasons were 13, but like, at some point, Stranger Things season 1 was 8, Stranger Things season 2 was 9. Obviously, they're willing to let creators decide how many episodes they're willing to put out.
Yeah.
I don't understand at this point, other than Disney and Marvel having a contractual agreement with Netflix, that they need 13, which is frustrating because the content gets so thin.
Yeah.
At some points.
Yeah. Well, and it's like network television, except for instead of 13, you're dealing with 26 or 22. And,
right.
And you're dealing with that 13 to 17 episode run where you're just like, oh, or even 10. Like, it just, you know, it basically January through, you know, March is just the slog of I forget to watch because it's just, it's not, you know, it's not usually that good. And then I end up binging and catching up with the finale and stuff like that in April. But yeah, I am going to continue to watch. I think the issue is that, you know, maybe I just need to space it out, and that's fine. I mean, it's one of the joys of streaming stuff on demand, you know, like Netflix is very affordable at, you know, $11 Canadian a month. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, I don't have to watch the whole 60 minutes in one go. If I've got other stuff to do, I can, you know, watch half over breakfast and half, you know, later on in the day, you know, stuff like that is cool with me. I'll keep an eye out for the arc. I do want to finish it and talk about it. Now that you guys have, both you and Lou have mentioned it here on this show, I want to try and keep my...
I'm just worried, though. I think it's the opposite. I think you, because of this plot, the plotting and the stretch, I almost feel like you really need to power through and smash through like 2 or 3 at a time. Because if you take bumps in the middle of the episodes, like it is like, it's like if you were taking slight, like, every 10 minutes you took a break in like Apocalypse Now. Like,
right.
That is a hefty long series to be like, you know, you really have to almost slam like Apocalypse Now. Like not that these are even remotely the same, but just when it comes to like thickness, when it, like when you're watching it, like you're saying, you sit down and watch Thor Ragnarok, it feels like you're in a bouncy castle. Like the whole time you're just amped up. Like the whole time you're like, let's go, 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 go. You're like on cocaine or like soda or whatever you want to go. But then like with Jessica Jones, it feels like you've literally sunk into like a fog of goo. And like you're just going to slowly like get through the pudding, just slowly. And
you're
like,
really, you know, selling it.
but like, you know, some people don't want, like literally... Some movies are like, I did like the Wachowski brothers, Speed Racer, with Emile Hirsch. I thought that movie was like at its time. I think if that one came out more now because of the success of some of these splashier Marvel films, it was bright, it was colorful, it did tons of jump cuts. It was just like, wow. It was just, but it was like literally like the old anime, just like a blast of energy constantly. And if you're prepared for that, it's great. Other people I know are going to sit down and watch that and be like, oh my God, like clenching their armrests, being like, please God, just make it stop. Like, I feel like I'm on a roller coaster and I just want to like throw up, like just stop. So like somebody like, and again, great noirs. Like, I mean, Chinatown is, I would describe as delicious banana pudding. You're slowly getting through. Like a great noir doesn't have to be, you know, like rat-a-tat-tat, you know, like pulp novels that are more adventure, like Indiana Jones, have this pace, whereas the pulp novels that are more like, you know, these like classic Philip Marlowe type of stuff, or more like, we're slowly gonna get there, we're gonna get there, but it's gonna take you a little while, and maybe at some points you're gonna want to doze off, you know, but it's still a fun little mystery, you like the people in it, so, you know, hopefully that sells the pudding a little bit better.
I think it's basically that she's in a bad mood all the time. So I always find that I the main characters and stuff that I watch, they tend to project onto me. So I'm just like, if I'm in a bad mood, I don't want to watch this show. Like, I just, you know, I want to forget the fact that I've been in a bad mood, not watch someone else in one. But anyway, I just, again, high quality. I still enjoy it. Like, I still enjoy that it's a good show. I get that it's a well-done show and that it's, you know, I enjoy watching the strong female characters as well. Like, I mean, it's nice to see all that kind of stuff happening. But anyway, I'll get into it and I will report back when I am either farther along or finished. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by you, dear patron. If you head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, you can look at a bunch of different ways to support the show. Basically, it's become a patron. I don't know why I say it a bunch. There's really only one. But when you do that, you can join myself and a few other people that are supporting the show in Patreon. Sorry, not Patreon, in Discord. We chat in there. It's a private channel for the people that are supporting the show. And it's a lot of fun. We talked about the Avengers trailer. We talked, there's some social media chat going on right now. What else? A lot of Minecraft chat going on, but that's fine. What else is going in there? Some artwork. Me and Phil Rude were talking about different illustrations and some comics and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the Discord. And if you'd like to partake in that and support the show at the same time, you can do so over at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. And I would like to give a big shout out and thank you to Yust Ueffing. He has been a long time supporter of the Citadel Cafe, and I really appreciate it. So thanks very much. My pick this week is super quick. I can't really talk too much about it because it's a tutorial. It's going to be more for people that are artists. However, I think it would be very interesting for people that are at least curious about that or appreciate the artistic process. It's from an artist named Nicholas Cole. I've mentioned him on the show before. He did a color basics tutorial that he put up on YouTube. He posted it for his patrons, but it was also a free thing. And I recently watched it, and not only is he charismatic and a good instructor, so he's easy to listen to, but it's a really cool breakdown of the basics of color and how he uses color to his advantage and really makes bright, beautiful, beautiful work. If you're curious about his work at all, you can go to patreon.com/jellybots. That's his account. He's making some really, really cool artwork there. And this color basics tutorial is actually on that page as well. Or you can just go to his YouTube channel and find it that way. We'll have links in the show notes. But he paints two characters in it. He paints a old guy with a mustache and a beard, which is pretty standard. But then he also paints like a blue luminescent orange glowy alien thing. And he talks about how he's going to do each one first. And then he applies those theories to these paintings. So the first part is pretty talky. For about 20 minutes, he goes over a lot of theory, but then he gets into about 40 minutes of drawing and painting and stuff like that, which is more entertaining to watch if you're not necessarily into the real nuts and bolts of it. But I would highly recommend it. I thought it was very, very worthwhile, especially if you're struggling with color or new to color as an artist and you want to try to work some of that kind of stuff out. It's very, very cool. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can head on over to thecitadelcafe.com for the show notes. Music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or join us in the Discord and let us know what you thought of the Avengers Infinity War trailer number 2. You can find us by name on Twitter and Facebook as well. My name is Joel Duggan. Everything that I am doing online is at joelduggan.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram with just my name. Brockett, where can people find you online?
Oh, you can check me out at TheCatVolver on Twitter and at BebopV23 on Instagram.com. You'll figure out how to spell it.
You know, you can also just search for Brockett Vola on Instagram and find
it. Oh,
you.
Does that work?
You
oh
can, yeah, God, you can just amazing. Do a name search and it'll come up. It'll be a lot easier okay. for people. I'll also have it linked in the show notes as well. You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick 2. Infinity Stones. Which ones do you choose?
Probably you got to use time and reality. Because if you literally control reality and time, you could have limitless opportunities to fix or stop anything else thrown at you.
Or just get the other stones, right? You could just use that.
Yeah,
to
that's
get
true.
The... And then you could just snap your fingers and just erase everything, which I think is the dumbest thing ever.